rejoice and be glad in it. So we see here the Lord has made this day. And sometimes we don't take serious enough about the days we have on this earth. We don't take them serious enough. We don't never know when our time is going to be up on this earth. And for us, there's it's not going to be here forever. And but I'd like to begin a study over in Exodus chapter 3. Exodus 3. There, chapter 3, there's two people that's going to ask different questions. And Moses being one of them. There in 3:13. Then Moses said to God, "Indeed, when I come to the children of Israel and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they say to me, 'What is his name?' What shall I say to them?" Moses was wanting to know what to tell the children of Israel. Here, God's about to use him in a way that he can be a deliverer from his children that were enslaved in Egypt. And so he's asking him, what's his name? And here he's declaring his name and what his name means for his people, is what chapter 3 continues with. And here in chapter 5, it sets us up to learn about God as well. We know that Moses and Aaron here enter the presence of the Lord. And they enter the presence of Pharaoh, and they say, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, 'Let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness.'" So what was Pharaoh's response to this? "Well, yeah, you surely go ahead and do it." But no, he didn't want them to do that. He goes on to say, what was Pharaoh's response? "Who is the Lord? Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and moreover, I will not let his people go, or Israel go." And as we know, I'd like to read, Exodus goes on to teach who God is. There, I'd like to read Exodus 3, 6 through 14. "Moreover, he said, 'I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.' And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, 'I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows.'" We see here in verse 7, God saw the oppression that was going on in Israel. So we'll talk a little bit farther on. We'll talk about that, about God being all-knowing. And it goes on there in verse 8, "So I've come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up from that land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, Now therefore, behold, the crowd of children of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. So he said, I will certainly be with you, and this shall be a sign to you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. Then Moses said to God, indeed, when I come to the children of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers is sitting to you, what shall I say? They say to me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? And here we see what God tells him. And God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, I am has sent me to you. So God here is telling him he's the great I am. And he said, you tell him that. Back in Exodus 5, we know what Moses is supposed to do, but how is Pharaoh going to react to this? Pharaoh is not asking this as a legitimate question. Rather, Pharaoh is asking with a heart of rebellion, who is the Lord to tell me what to do? Who is the Lord that I should listen to or obey? Who is the God to tell me what to do? Who is this God? And a question that is asked by many today, millions of people today, when we speak to people about God in the Scripture, that tells them how they should be living, how they should be changing their lives, but their response is the same. Who is God that should tell them what they should be doing? Pharaoh thinks he has no reason at all to listen to God. People today think they have no reason to listen to God as well. Mm-hmm. You know, as we look outside, we can see God's handiwork. And we know God's word is true. If you go out here, and I know Adrian and Emma are out there, Dairy Queen, Stephen, and when you're up there at the line at Dairy Queen, you place in your order, and you go around this way toward the bathrooms, and there's a picture up on the wall. And if you don't remember it, next time you get there, you can see it. It's probably going to be here. And there's a picture of Dairy Queen. But over the Dairy Queen building, there's a rainbow. So what's the first person or thing that we think about when we see this rainbow? And of course, it's God and His promise to us that He would not flood the world again. And I'd like to look at some verses with you this morning that shows God's creation. And let's go to John 1:3. John 1:3. I'll sort of hit these in running fashion. And it says, all things were made through him, and without him, nothing was made that was made. So God is the creator of all things. Isaiah 42:5. Isaiah 42 and verse 5. Thus says God the Lord, who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread forth the earth, that which comes from it, who gives breath to the people on it, and spirit to those who walk on it. We're only here because God allows us to be here. He gives us the breath in which we breathe. Job 12, 7 through 10. And it says, but now ask the beast, and they will teach you, and the birds of the air, and they will tell you, or speak to the earth, and it will teach you, and the fish of the sea will explain to you, who among all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this, and whose hand is the life of every living thing and the breath of all mankind. So God not only holds our life in His hand, He holds the animals' hands in His hand as well, and every creation that we can look upon. When I was out in New Mexico, I took this picture, this guy took this picture of me hugging this elk. And in the background, I really didn't focus on what was back there. I just thinking more about the elk. But in the background was the Rocky Mountains. And I should have brought that picture. I might bring it and pass it around and show the beauty of the Rocky Mountains, some of God's creation. Over in Psalms 95, and verse 4 and 5. In His hand are the deep places of the earth. The heights of the hills are His also. The sea is His, for He has made it, and His hands form the dry land. Of course, the Grand Canyon, we can see the beauty of it. Of course, I can see it in pictures because I'm probably not going to travel out there to see the Grand Canyon. But a lot of people go there, say it's real beautiful. And just like the Rocky Mountains, just like the Appalachian Mountains, which is close, but I'm not traveling up there to those as well. Another Psalms 104. Psalms 104, 24 and 25. O Lord, how manifold are Your works! In wisdom You have made them all. The earth is full of Your possessions. The great and wide sea, in which it are innumerable teeming things, living things, both small and great. So we see how God's wisdom, all of this was part of His great plan. And we know that God, He's the great creator and sustainer of all the world. And of course, we know Genesis 1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And as we think about that, I believe God did it for His glory, that people could look along that, just like we thought of the rainbow. As soon as we heard about the rainbow, we thought about God. As we look outside, we think about God. But even the creation of man is to His glory. And He fashioned the things that He made in a way that would benefit not only man, but also the animals as well. He created all things so they would have, that it talks about, you know, the grass and the vegetation. Well, they have to have these things to survive, just as we have to have certain things to survive as well. And but we know He didn't do it alone. There in John, John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And there's a woman at work, she always says, well, she believes that God and Jesus is the same person. And I said that about John 1:1, but He's still the same person, you know. That's just the way you represent it or say it. Now, I thought, well, I don't know how easy it could be to, you know, say it. And in the garden, when He was praying, who was He praying to? You know. And so we know we are dependent on God. This world is dependent on God. And the animals as well are dependent on God. And I thought about asking one of my daughters or my wife this question, but I've already asked them. I know Amanda got it. I think all of them got it right eventually. Does anybody know what omni means? Omni, the word omni. All? Yeah, all. So we think about God, and we know He's powerful, and God created the world in six days. And omnibenevolence is that God is all-loving. And if you would, turn to Psalms 86, verse 15. Psalms 86 and verse 15. But You, O Lord, are God full of compassion and gracious, long-suffering and abundant in mercy and truth. We need to be thankful that God's one that is long-suffering, one that is compassionate about us. He cares about His people, His created people. And, of course, the one that, over John 3:16, I want to make sure it gets us right. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish but have everlasting life. So He sent His Son here, something that was left the glory of heaven and came to this world of sin. And in doing so, He showed His love toward us. Omniscience. We know that God is all-knowing. We said that He knew, as we talked about there in Moses, in Exodus, He knew the oppression of His people. He knew that. He might not have been there, but He knew that as physically as we would have went there and could see it with our eyes, what was going on. But He knew it. He didn't have to go there. And over in First John 3 and verse 20. For if our heart condemns us, God is greater than our heart and knows all things. So there's nothing that He knows every thought. He cannot. We might hide things from one another, but we can't hide them from God. And we know omnipresence is God is everywhere. Over it back in Psalms 33. Psalms 33, verse 13 and 14. The Lord looks from heaven. He sees all the sons of man. From the place of His dwelling, He looks on all the inhabitants of the earth. Of course, something we cannot see is heaven. And from God's standpoint, He can see everything. We can only see or travel somewhere to see what God allows us to see or what we can see, take in ourselves. But we cannot see what's going on somewhere in the world right now, but God can. And sometimes God allows His creation to suffer. We think of the war that's going on over in Ukraine. I'm sure there's people where they don't want a war. They didn't want one to begin with. I'm sure there's people in Russia that didn't want a war. They didn't want it to begin with. But they got caught up in it. And people suffer from this war. We think of COVID. Now, I'm just stabbing this. I don't know that this was the truth. They say that COVID got out because of some laboratory mistake or something, maybe in China. I'm not 100% sure how it got out. But you look what happened to it and what happened to the people that suffered from that. And they died from COVID. Something that was not their fault, but it cost them. And their family's great grief. And something's still going on today. Not as bad as it did. So, God started His creation. And I like to get about six people involved in this. If you would, just raise your hand about six people. I got Steve, Justin, Kevin, and I'll take my three girls, my two girls, and three girls, Lynn. All right, when I name a day of creation, you tell me what happened. All right, Justin, the second day.
The second day, there you have God creating the sky, separating the waters from the waters.
All right. Stephanie, the first day. All right. Steve, the third day.
That's where He made land, grass, trees.
Land, fourth day.
Sun, moon, stars.
Card, Amanda, the fifth day.
Sleeping in the morning.
what you said?
The birds and the sea.
The creatures and the same creatures that could fly, and then Kevin. The animals and the humans. So, as we end there in his creation about animals, we think about animals. They were put on this earth not only to glorify God, but also to relieve burdens of man. What are some animals that you can think of that, I will say back in the, well, I'll take it back. There's probably, they're going on today, but we don't see it as much as we used to today, and I'll explain that in a minute. What were some animals that were used as burden reliefs back in the 60s and 70s? Anybody got any?
Donkeys.
Yeah, I think more like mules. Yeah, mules. The old G. Hall. Remember that is when you'd be behind a set of team of mules that were working the ground. If you wanted them to go left, you could say G. And if you wanted them to go right, it'd be Hall. And it could be vice versa. But I know it's G. Hall. But I remember people, and still the Amish, Mennonite, and all, they use them today. And you can still go over there, maybe not mules. They used to have a mule day down in Columbia, Tennessee. And you could go down there and they put these weights on these sleds. And these teams of mules would come down there and see what they could, how much they could pull. It's much better than, I think, than a tractor pull. You can go down there and see them pulling and stuff like that. Of course, cows, cattle, we eat cattle, we get milk from cattle. They're a good income. There's much good about them. The horse as well. You can see them. One thing, I was talking with Tim about, and I don't know if y'all remember seeing her around town. There used to be a woman that would walk around with a singing eye dog around here. It was a German Shepherd. I know me and Leanne remembers that. I don't know if some of y'all do or not. And you don't see use of dogs as much in that past. Well, I say around here, there might be some more like up in Bowling Green or something that you might know of or seen. They're not as. I remember some people would keep chihuahuas just because they had asthma, and these dogs could take this asthma away from people that had it. Their eyes, it seemed like they would draw it, and their eyes would leak like they was crying all the time, and as the asthma. They say that come out, and that's I don't know if it's an old folk story, but I know my grandmother believed in that and stuff. Who has association with pets here? I know I've got, yes, Steve Nim's got a dog. Remember old Sancho, Justin? It was a cat. I think I've got five dogs, four beagle hounds, and a coon hound at home. And you name the pet just about, And I could just about tell you if I've had it or not. Now, I'm talking about a pet. Like, now, rabbits, don't let anybody think you. Rabbits multiply fast. I found that out. I had them running in a field, and I started with 2 rabbits, ended up with about 30, and got out of the rabbit business because they just run together. pigeons, dogs, cats, ponies, goats. My dad, I only remember one time, he had a couple of sheep. They got out, and they was on a rampage here in Franklin. We caught them up in behind on Wick Road there on the left. It used to be a big, we wouldn't call them in, but there's a big chain link high fence behind it. It's the only way we caught them. And as the last sheep, we had horses, mules. I've brought up around pets. And we've had some that we cherish and we remember. They play a big part in our lives. I remember Amanda had a dog, and in her old age, one thing we'd tell her about, her dog would start looking at the wall, and she'd just stand there and just look at the wall. And she'd be jealous of Amanda. I believe had a little pup that come in. And that dog, when she'd get jealous of it or mad at it, she'd go over there and just start looking at the wall, wouldn't have nothing to do with it or nothing. And we know that animals are not the main focus of the Bible, but they share a part in God's creation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of you might be thinking this morning, well, Thomas, I thought we were going to talk about the animals. Well, we will, maybe not today, but we're going to get into talking about it. And I'll sort of give you a rundown of the top. Steve was wanting to hit the book. I think the eagles are the first one. We're going to go with the adaxes first, and then the ants. And then I'll probably try to scatter the eagle in there. And maybe the, I could probably get him into the ants or something, but as we go along, we're just going to hit on certain ones, because I'm going to tell you something. The Bible, when you go and look at these animals, you might have one verse that talks about it. Well, Thomas, how are you going to make a class up on one verse? And it may not just be mentioning them, and that's it. Well, you got to go with something else. So I'm going to try to get us, like if I'm talking about the apes, we might talk about strength. And the ones in the Bible has strength and all. And ones that, and of course there's different kinds of strength. But have you ever looked into the eyes of your animals and thought what they were thinking? Say, wonder what you're thinking. And, a dog can never, they'll always be loving to you. If you're kind to them, most of the time, you go down there, they don't wag their tail. Well, I'm having a bad day. A dog or something like that. And they'll always, you can always vent to them. And they're going to be the same today, tomorrow, unless they get ill or something, just like we do. But, and not every time, they have good days too, like we do. We got to remember that. And we got to remember to take care of them. God wants us to take care of His creation. Now, saying that, mine, when I let them out, I've got a coon dog, and what he's supposed to do is go after a raccoon. And he better not be going after no deer, no rabbit or nothing, because he's a coon dog. My beagle hounds, they better go after a rabbit when I cut them loose. Or they're not going to have a home with the pettigoes. They're going to be finding another home. Now, I love them, and I will protect them. When I let them out of the dog box, they go get in the pen, because they know they better be getting in that pen. And they'll head down there, they'll walk right in, and they know which pen's theirs. And, but, And we know animals are smarter than a lot of people give us credit and give them credit for. Just like dogs, you can teach them stuff. You know, and I know there's a lot of cat people out here. But I've never, all big debates always been, well, which one's better, dogs or cat? Well, that's clearly one-sided to me. Because I've never seen a cat sit, shake hands, trail a trail. Now, I'd be fearful of the cat's ancestors, and you should be too. But I always think that dogs are, it's always fascinated me when you can let a dog out and they can trail something that they're supposed to. And we know they're domesticated animals, and there are some that are wild. And God's plan, these animals, they're not to be, you're really not supposed to be trying to domesticate a wild animal. A lot of people's tried, but a lot of people's failed in doing so. They're still failing today. I know that me and Justin talked about this. I don't know how he found out about it. It could have been for me, but I think he already knew about it. There was an owl up in New York that they got vandalized. It was, matter of fact, it's an eagle owl, I believe it was. And he got vandalized. They vandalized his cage, somebody did. He got away from the zoo. Well, if you think about it, in his life, everything's been provided for him. He's been took care of. But when he got out, you think he knew how to hunt? And then all of a sudden, you know, tell you the truth, I don't know that they ever called him again. He kept coming. He kept going to the park, and he'd come back to the zoo. I don't know if they ever called him, but I'm sure his instincts, the wildness of his instincts would have kicked in. I go with a guy hunting out toward Gulf City. Last fall, he said, let me show you something around there. And he had a little baby red fox, real small like him. Had a little baby raccoon. He had them in there together. They're really enemies of one another, but they were little enough and didn't know that they were enemies. And at the time, they didn't know there was a fox, they didn't know there was a raccoon. A raccoon will eat you up if you try to get a hold of them. Red fox will too. Red fox, I've seen him charge at people. So as they got older, Kenny had to, you know, they had to go back to the wild. And then eventually, they might hang around for a little bit, but that wildness in them would take over and they'd be gone. But we know Genesis talks about that humans, not animals, were made in God's creation. We read the Bible and study the relationship between man and God and sin and salvation. And as we talked about, God created the heavens as we know them, and He created the land and the water and air, day and night. What would that be important, day and night, for animals? It's like I talked about, I can hunt, I got to do that at night. Why is it? Yeah, the raccoons roam at night. The rabbits are out there. Well, they're out at night too. I guess you could run, you can't see your dogs, couldn't see nothing. But they're more out in the daytime. And, you know, both of them has their place. And we talked about the vegetation this morning to help support the life of these animals. You think about the moon. I hate to go coon hunting when the moon is bright. Now, I think maybe last night you can went outside and it's been light as everything. And you can walk around and by the moonlit. And that's a bad night. Because most of the time, the animals, they're not going to get out and stir much around because they can see everything. And they can see the dog, too. And a lot of times I bump wild turkeys off trees at night. They just take off flying. Vultures, I know where there's a place where you could probably go there at night and you could walk down through there and all these vultures would take off. And don't ask me why. I hadn't studied that yet. I might study before we get into birds, scavenger birds. Why do they roost in dead trees? Hopefully we'll find that out in this study. He says he created, you know, like we talked about cattle, and we think about, you know, the buffalo, the Cape buffalo over in Africa. Well, and there's some cattle you can't approach out in the field here. Because you'll be on, I remember one time my friend that passed away. He had a heifer with a calf hanging out of it, and that calf was dead. We was going to have to pull that calf. And you physically have to take it out. I've seen vets take these tiles to them, like a cummerbund, and then tire up. And these, anyway, I was out there, and Jimmy said, I'll be right back. I forgot something. And he left me the rope. And that heifer, she was probably from here, the road, and she seen me out there standing. And here she come. But, you know, I was talking about you don't know what's in the head of animals. And she got about, now, I was a lot younger and a lot faster, and I was glad I was. Because when she come at me, about 20 yards, she started throwing that head down, and I knew right then it's time to get out of Dodge. I took off to a fence and got over the fence, and I'm telling you, I think she was breathing on my legs back there when I went over that fence. But we got her up and got the calf pulled, but it didn't help her. She eventually died anyway. And we know that some animals, as we talked about, they don't do good in captivity. There's a guy that talks about animal creatures of excellence. As I read this, it said that tigers, there's more in backyard captivity today than it is in the actual wild. And people take these wild animals and they try to sell them to other people. Well, you think about, I believe it's up there in the White House. We was at work one day and they had this alligator in a pond up there around the park. And what it was, and of course it was smaller, but somebody had it for a pet or brought it from Florida. They decide they can't take care of it. They just take it and throw it into a pond and they're done with it. And you think after a while what would happen? You know, he's not going to stay there very long. And he's going to have to find a different kind of water source. And but these tigers, they you not, even in a circus, you know, people, they go in there with, you know, with chairs and whips and stuff. And you just can't, you couldn't tame them. And they eventually tried, I can't remember, I believe it was a woman that used to watch over these tigers and care for them, and they killed her one day. She took for granted, didn't take something in there with her, and one got on her and killed her. And so we know that God's over man, and man's over the animals. He put Adam in the garden to do something, and that was to tend the garden, to take care of it. And he allowed Adam to name the animals as well. So we're going to stop there today. I'll guarantee you Wednesday night we're going to get into the ADAX, which is an antelope. So if y'all want to sort of brush up on your antelopes, I'll give you some facts about it. We'll look at pictures about it, and we'll get into that Wednesday night, and possibly get into the ants as well. Thank you for your attention.